G'day and welcome to the Car Expert Podcast. There is a language warning for this episode. G'day and welcome to the next episode of the Founders Podcast. We appreciate all of you guys listening in and giving us such positive feedback about this. So we're going to continue. Alborz, how are you?
Good, mate. How are you?
Oh, wonderful. Tony, how's things?
Yeah, good, Paul. I still am sort of wondering when you guys are ever going to escape the prison of Melbourne.
Well, look, I've been out for my 59 minutes today, so that was good.
It's literally like a prison, 1 hour a day in the yard. Not,
yeah, I'm not even kidding you. When we go,
are
for
you making it another place, Paul?
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah, when my wife and I go for walks around the tan here, there's literally like five or six army guys walking around with police officers. It's incredibly intimidating. So you guys have it very easy at the moment. Now, today we're talking about something interesting. We get asked a lot of, well, actually shitloads, we get asked, what do you drive? And often with a motoring journalist, they drive either an incredibly old and rubbish car, and then they're in something new all the time and they pretend it's theirs, or they actually have quite an interesting collection. So I think we've got like a nice little mix there, and we're going to split it up a little bit. So the first section is where we're going to talk about cars that we owned before Car Advice, new cars that we bought, and then secondhand cars that we bought. So I reckon let's kick off with cars that we owned before Car Advice, and the crown for the world's shittest car ownership must go to Alborz. Please walk us through what you owned.
Look, mate, before I started Car Advice, I had this 1993 Ford Falcon EB, I think would be the series from memory.
What a shit box.
It was, and it was just made worse by the fact that it was purple.
Can I ask what the fuck you paid for that thing?
I was like, it was like 15. I mean, that's all I could afford. It's like $1,500. And
you got ripped off.
And I remember going to Super Cheap Auto and buying spray paint, and I spray painted the hubcaps black so it looked less shit. it was so embarrassing that I remember when I used to go out like in Brisbane back in my early 20s or late teens. I used to park it kilometers away from anywhere that anyone could ever see me. And yeah, the funniest part was when I first met Tony, I remember, you know, he emailed me and said, oh, let's catch up and see if there's anything we could do on Car Advice. And I was going to go up to the Gold Coast to meet him, and I was so fucking embarrassed of that car that I actually got a friend of mine to drive me in another car in case Tony saw the car.
Yeah, not that I would have seen you, because it was fucking 17 floors up in a block of units.
I know, but he would have asked.
Knowing his luck, you would have spotted him.
But had I seen the fucking thing, I would have asked for a lot more than fucking 25% of the fucking business, to be honest. me.
So that worked, man.
I literally buried myself.
Getting my friend to drive me up in his WRX definitely helped. So,
I feel sorry for that guy. What the fuck happened to him? Like, I thought he was your partner.
He's he always tells me that he should have asked for a few percent of Car Advice in that meeting as well.
Rookie error. Yeah. But you know the funny thing, actually, we did a, well, Scott Colley did an interview with Ian Callum on the website, and you can hunt that down. Ian was actually involved in designing the EA Falcon, which kind of was the precursor to the EB Falcon. So
really?
You actually bought a car that was designed, or part, well, he actually, to be perfectly honest, he only designed the door handles, he admits, but you own a piece of history there. Well, you did.
Well, I've got two other cars designed by Ian Callum now, so maybe it was a continuation of my life.
Hey, there's an interesting fact I just heard on another podcast about Callum, that he never actually owned one of his production cars that he designed.
Oh, really?
And the guy was saying that it's likely because the fact that the concept vehicle was so cool, and then by the time they bloated up the production vehicles, he just thought they weren't worth fucking having.
Well, that's actually a good point. When you think about it, a designer puts pen to paper like 5 years before a car's released. You can imagine that even when you buy a car, you kind of get over it after a little while. Imagine having something that you drew yourself 5 years later. It's had all the fun taken out of it. Exactly. I don't know that I could be bothered owning it either.
Yeah. Once the bean counters and the emissions and everything else goes into the car is often nothing like the car you designed or that you perceive the car to be, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, okay, Alborz, what actually ended up happening to that Falcon?
It just kept going into limp mode and getting stuck in third gear, and I must have spent over $3,000 in a 2-year period.
Get another gearbox, you should have just swapped it out.
Mate, it was the biggest piece of shit. It actually put me off ever touching a Ford ever again because it just kept having issues. I remember one time I was driving and the headlights just died. And I just, something new went wrong with it every day. But you know what? It actually had a lot of power. You know, that inline six-cylinder engine, that old engine is still pretty good, a four-liter engine. And it had 14-inch wheels. It used to slide around everywhere. It really made me learn how to drive a rear-wheel drive because that thing tried to kill you every time you drove it in the wet. It had no traction control, nothing. And the fact that I actually lived through that car was amazing. But, yeah, you know, every time I'd come, it would be overheating. There'd just be something fucking wrong with it, man. And, I sold it. I got a roadworthy for it. I don't know how. Someone gave me a roadworthy, and I sold it for like $700 to someone. And I said to the guy when he picked it up, I said, "Man, this car is a bucket of shit." And he said, "Don't worry, it's worth $700." So.
It wasn't Officer Sweeney that gave you that.
It was not. No.
Elbows is good on his knees, so he can get a lot of things done.
Yeah.
Now, what did you want?
Let's talk about cars.
Well, I was about to say, what did you own after the Falcon? Where did it sort of go before sort of Car Advice kicked off?
No, mate, I right sort of before Car Advice kicked off, I bought a WRX, or right actually in the first year of Car Advice, I think I bought a WRX. I guess that doesn't really qualify, but I had that WRX for many, many years, and I love that
fucking car.
Yeah, you trashed it and destroyed it plenty of times. That car really was like, I would have spent over $20,000 modifying it by the time that it was gone, and it was
fucking... Yeah, you put a lot of work into that.
Yeah,
I remember that.
Yeah.
That was the guy at Newcastle or on some...
Yeah, no, we went out there to get him to tune it. Yeah, that's right. We went out there to get him to tune it.
And then you know what happened, Paul? George and I were in the new one, and we kept sort of dragging him off at the lights, and he was so fucking far behind every single time, and he just spent like $5,000 on getting the thing to go quicker, and we were just in hysterics laughing because every time we do a launch, we killed him.
That's because you were dumping the clutch at 5,000 RPM, and I was not doing that with my car. But do you remember that we were like literally drag racing on the highway back then? It was just absolutely
allegedly. Yeah.
Allegedly. I was going to say, I don't know what the statute of limitations is, but yeah.
In a different country.
Yeah, in Mexico. Yeah. Tony, what about you? I know you've had about 10,000 cars.
I haven't had that many, but my first car when I got back from living in the US was a Passat. You've probably never even seen one of these Passat sort of wagons. And it wasn't the old style wagon. It was this abomination of a car, and I'm sure it had been painted with house paint because that was the finish that it had on. I think I paid $1,600 for it. And the guy nearly didn't sell it. It was just a heap of shit. It was an auto, and I remember ringing up this guy called Peter Finlay, who ran a racing school. And I was going for my racing license. He said, "What car do you own?" I said, "Oh, it's a Passat with an auto." And he said, "Well, don't bring that. I didn't tell you this, but one of the rental company, I think it was Hertz, they have Nissan X's you can hire. I didn't tell you that." So I left the fucking Passat alone, and there were springs coming through the floor. You had to have a cushion on the seat and all this sort of shit. And then I bought one of my favorite cars that I should never have sold, which was an Alfa Romeo 1975 Spider in a beautiful red, and it belonged to a King's Cross criminal in Sydney. And his girlfriend had stacked it the first week she was given it new, and had been completely rebuilt. And for some reason, a priest up in King's Cross had the car. And when I went up there to have a look at it, he peeled back the cover on it. And I was just wanting to stop myself from smiling and laughing so hard because he wanted $10,000. The thing was brand new. And I love that car. And I remember racing that car up to Newcastle with some other guy in another Alpha. And the thing was so quick. And I eventually sold that car to an accountant for $13,500. So I paid $10,500, sold it for $13,500 2 years later. Then I bought a 911 SC and stock standard cookie cutter wheels, 3-liter engine. Real? It's called cookie cutters. They're just basically stamped out. And they were sort of known for this. And most people sort of changed them when they realized the 911 didn't handle that well with the cookie cutters. And I couldn't afford the wheel change because it was like $3,500 for a set of Fuchs wheels back then. I should never have sold that car. Apparently, I sold that car for $49,500, bought it for $35,000, and apparently
we're
now...
We're talking like 1980s here, right?
It was an 81.
Yeah, right.
SC, and apparently today it's worth about $130,000,
$140,000. Well, I was about to say, if it was a real one...
Totally real, stock, Australian delivered, and literally had done 20,000 Ks when I bought the car. Geez. And it even had this sort of tweed... this tweed upholstery, this German stuff they made in Germany, is quite rare, and it was one of only two colors in the country. And what a fucking car to sell.
Well, anyway. Just before you continue, I think it's worth, if anyone's listening to this, email us or get in touch with us on social media, or email us at podcast@carexpert.com.au. Any cars that you owned that you wished you didn't sell, I'd be keen to hear from people.
Yeah, it's everyone's got those stories, right? But I just want to preface this whole thing by the fact that I never owned these cars. The ANZ Bank outright. Like, I honestly spent more on interest, 17% back then. And then I bought a HSV 5000. My biggest regret is buying this HSV 5000 in British Racing Green, or whatever they called it back then. They had two colors of this thing. And I drove it out of the West City Holden dealership, and I planted it immediately. And I just, there was a horrific feeling of sickness in my gut that this fucking car's not quick enough. it was the first car with 200 kilowatts in Australia, but it was a heap of shit. I got to tell you, I nearly died one morning going to work trying to chase a 911 turbo. the car just wouldn't handle. Yeah.
I think you ran out of talent before you ran out of power there.
Yeah, probably, man.
But you know, today that car is worth a shitload. Was that the SV 5000?
Yeah, the green one.
Yeah. Mate, that thing is worth a shitload of money today.
Really?
It's the funniest thing. I mean, no offense to Holden lovers and stuff, but back then these cars were just fast in a straight line.
Yeah.
But today, finding one in mint condition, and I'm looking at a picture of one in that green color at the moment.
Yeah. What are they worth? Incredible.
Well, it depends where you find it, but I saw one sold recently. It wasn't really in that good condition for $30,000. So $30,000.
I sold mine for $49,500, but... I paid 50. I bet I paid a 17.5% interest rate in the day. And the fucking thing, every time it would go in for a service, it'd be another $1,200. With something gone wrong, there was like a control arm that was worn through. And I treated it. I never actually, besides flooring it outside the dealership when I left the dealership just to test it, I never actually drove that car that hard. But my biggest regret.
When you tested before you bought it?
I didn't actually, because I actually read a wheels fucking review, to be honest.
That was your first mistake.
Probably my biggest mistake. I don't know. They were raving about the car that had different cams and all this sort of stuff, and I kind of got got hooked, line and sinker on that one. But I should have bought at the time it was called the Group A. It was the same car, VN, but yep. I tell you what, I did test that car. And that car is the car I should have bought. It was so much stiffer. It only had about 15 kilowatts more power, but fuck, it went so hard. And it was manual, of course, and the HSV 5000 was auto. And that's the car I should have bought, because there was far fewer of them, and I guarantee that car would be worth a lot of money.
Yeah, that's the biggest problem, Tony. So I actually just found one here at Shannon, sold in 2017. So they've gone up in value since then for $52,000.
Shit.
And this one is in good condition. But that was the issue. They were a four-speed auto. Yeah. So the autos have come a long way since then. But back then, a four-speed was...
That would have sapped all the power out of it, I imagine.
Yeah, pretty much did. But the Group A felt a lot quicker and a lot tighter. So whatever. I've never even seen one of those Group A's on the road since. Yeah. So they must be quite rare. And I guarantee if the HSV 5000 is 50, the Group A would have to be at least 75-80 now.
You know? Bloody oath. They sold... we're going to go on about Australian cars. We'll talk about the rest of that later. But the chicken coop, the Falcon that they just sold was $300,000 or something like that. And that thing had rust falling out of it. So Australian cars are a really good sort of investment at the moment if you have one, not to buy one.
Well, I mean, my favourite was always that Phase 3 Falcon GT. That thing was the bomb back in the day. And it still looks good today.
Yeah, you know. Absolutely. Any other highlights before we move on?
No. What did you have?
Well, it's going to be a short discussion here. I only had one car, and it was a V6 Toyota Camry. Depressing shit.
There's nothing more to be said. Shall we move on?
Yeah, let's very quickly move on. That was a depressing car history for me. I actually never had a reason to own one because I started doing the motoring journalism stuff before I turned 18. So from 18 until now, so like 15 years or whatever, I've had.
Why don't you start with what you bought when you sold your share in Car Advice? Yeah.
Yes. So new cars. I had driven I bought a Toyota Supra GTS, and I bought that an A90, and I bought that because it was I drove it as a prototype in Spain and was really impressed with it, and it meant that I could have a BMW engine, the straight six turbo, which is just a sensational engine. And you had a BMW interior, but a Toyota ride and handling tune. So after driving that,
Point out a Toyota steering wheel, which is the ugliest part of that car?
Yeah, fucking steering wheel. Really? Is terrible.
It is horrendous.
It's not a Toyota steering wheel. It's a BMW wheel.
I thought it was a Toyota wheel. No.
But why does the Z4 have such a better wheel?
Yeah, exactly. So that's why everyone's changing them. There's a couple of things that are sort of wrong with the car, and I'll briefly touch on them.
What color did you get? That's the.
I got the matte gray. Yeah. So
is that the best? Sort of, that's probably the best color. Right?
Yeah, you would have to get a yellow or red one. Why would you get a matte gray?
Yellow.
Yeah, yellow.
Yeah, not that. Yellow, man.
No one buys yellow cars.
They do in Japan, man.
Yeah, and in Queensland. Yeah. The matte is a fantastic color, and in person it looks really good. And the only other thing I bought for it was wheels, which were some lightweight Advan GT wheels that I got from the Time Attack Challenge.
I got to say, that car, I just saw one of you don't see them every day, by the way, either. But I tell you what, they do draw your attention, don't they? They do.
The one that our good friend Mark has here in Brisbane, that's yellow with the black highlights, looks absolutely sensational.
His car looks cool.
I went on a drive with him a couple of weeks ago in my Lambo and in his Supra, and no one gave a fuck about the Lambo.
It's unbelievable, isn't it?
I don't understand that. I like I said before, we've driven shitloads of supercars, and whenever I go for a drive in my car, people like fall over themselves. And I think the difference is that a supercar looks ostentatious and expensive. Sorry, elbows. But this doesn't look that expensive, but it still looks good. So people are more interested in looking at it because they won't feel like they're inflated.
It's accessible.
But I think it's got head turning lines on it and bulges and all sorts of stuff. It's a proper performance car. I mean,
the only shit thing is that they're upgrading it every 10 minutes, which means the one that I bought is outdated immediately.
It's already slower.
Exactly.
I was genuinely looking. I thought, I'd love to own one of these because they'd make a really good daily. But when I heard that they're putting a new engine in, I'm like, well, why the fuck would I buy a current one? And then you're like, they're going to upgrade every. It's kind of like the GTR, right? The GTR, that's what they did. They did an update on it every year.
No, but the GTR wasn't a performance upgrade. They only did minor step changes over the past like 10 years of that car. Yeah. This car had only been out in Australia for 6 months when they announced that they were actually changing part of the top end and the exhaust side of it.
Why did they do that? And what information did you get from Toyota about that?
So zero information from Toyota. And the reason they did it is to improve airflow because it had one exhaust outlet and I think now it has three. And that will improve the tunability of the car. They're also probably going to put that the Turbo 6 out of the M3 and M4 in it. But the biggest issue I have actually is with Toyota Australia. I bought the car and they had this amazing box that they gave you with the car. It had driving gloves and a custom book and all this sort of other stuff. But they have done absolutely nothing to engage with customers. So where you go to a BMW, you can buy a 1 Series entry level and you'll still be able to go do a BMW track day. Toyota, they've got a GR range of cars now and they have not engaged once with customers. It's so disappointing.
That's bizarre.
Well, that's mainly because it's probably lost in some politically correctness thing where they can't get insurance from someone about a track. Like, you know, the kind of company that Toyota and most of the Japanese are, they just can't do anything because they're so scared of something going wrong. Well,
to be honest, that's going to be their big downfall because with the Supra, I completely get that you upgrade a car every now and then and that's fine. But what happens is for people like me who have bought it, you're instantly disappointed when a new one comes out that's better. But you all know that a new one's going to come out that's better, but you can't do that every year. And I think once people start seeing this trend, I wonder if it's going to affect their sales, because why would you buy one if you know that in 12 months' time it's not going to be worth as much?
They offered you, so there's been no offering of retrofitting or what they can do to, because I mean, you guys, you particularly jumped in really early and was certainly an early adopter of this car. So you seem to have had no benefit from that.
That's right. And there was talk about, you know, track days that they would organize. And I'm happy to pay for track days. I don't give a shit. But if you don't actually organize any, no one will want to come to your brand. And it was the same thing with the 86. You bought the car and they were just like, yep, catch ya.
Yeah, but you see the difference even in a mainstream company like Hyundai with the N car. Like they have N festivals all the time. I think there's one coming to Brisbane soon, actually.
Yeah. And over backwards. Yeah. And then Audi, Mercedes, Benz, BMW, they're masters of track day engagement.
The last N24-hour race in Germany, I was actually there with Mini, and there was actually N cars all over the Nürburgring entrance and all that sort of stuff. So that's the sort of level they go to, you know, incite people into buying cars.
I almost feel like with the Supra, because it's really not a Toyota, and let's be fucking honest, it's not. Maybe there's
a badge on it.
Yeah, but maybe there is an element of, you know, the Japanese that feel like the car isn't really theirs, and therefore trying to celebrate the owners isn't really. I don't know. Maybe there's something. I don't know.
Could be as weird as that.
It could be something like that. But they had the 86.
Well, the 86 is a Subaru. The 86 is built by Subaru, so
maybe the proof in the pudding will be the Yaris, because that's technically theirs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's all theirs, isn't it?
Yeah. The Yaris GR is their car. The other new car that I bought, and this is the fastest car of all of us.
May I admit.
So is the and probably the tech leader of all of us as well, and the smartest purchase is the Tesla Model 3 Performance. So this is another car that I drove at the launch. I had the chance to go to San Francisco and be part of that. I met the chief engineer, who was an Australian bloke that worked on the Territory and Falcon, and I'm like, okay, this thing might not be a bucket of shit.
And yet you were still disappointed when you drove.
drove it, and I was like, yeah, okay, I like this. And then we had the chance to drive it again from Los Angeles to Vegas and back again. And I was like, holy shit, this car is amazing. So I ordered one, and then that's when the disappointment started. The car was delayed, and then what else happened? The whole process of picking up the car was a clusterfuck. When I got the car, there was I had to take it back to get some stuff sort of fixed on it. You know, build quality and stuff was good, but it was just little things like the headlights were out of alignment, the steering was out of alignment, that you could clearly see that they rushed to deliver as many cars as they could. But if you put those things to one side, I find the car really hard to fault, because you are getting like space age tech. It is so fast that you, like, literally, if Elvis was to pull up at the lights next to me with his Lambo, unless you engage launch control, I will beat you every single time. And that's the thing. I know when you're going to go hard, and in that situation, I probably won't bother. But if you don't engage launch control, you'll be sitting back at the lights while your dual clutch gearbox figures out what day it is.
I have to say, Paul, I've never actually driven a Model 3. It's so bizarre. Have you driven one?
I have, and they are a great car, don't get me wrong. But as someone that also ordered a Tesla, I ordered a Model X.
Has got to be the ugliest fucking car.
It is.
That's up there with the SsangYong Stavic, that car. Like, seriously, modern version of the Stavic.
I actually kind of like it. I like the doors and everything. But when I got some friends here that work at the pre-delivery center where the Teslas come direct to port, and I went and saw my car that was pre-delivery right before the Tesla guys here had got a hold of it. Dude, the car was fucked. The doors creaked like they were broken. There was upholstery falling off the roof. There was damage to the paint. The doors didn't align. There were so many issues with the car, and I actually thought, if this is how it comes out of factory, this is so obvious that what I can see here, what is wrong that I can't see? Like, you know what I mean? Like, I just thought, you know what, Elon?
Under the body and
I just wasn't thought, that like 200 grand, that thing?
Yeah, it was. And I just thought, I just said to my wife, I'm just going to donate this deposit to Elon and call it a bad fucking decision, because I don't want to take delivery of this car. And that's what I did. I lost my deposit on it. I can't believe
you didn't send them an email and say, hey, listen, I've just seen all these fucking issues.
No, I did.
Like, I don't want the car.
And then, well, I didn't want to get my friend for letting me see it in trouble, but I said, look, you know, I've been told that there's some issues pretty little. He goes, oh, and I think the response was, that's normal. We get them all fixed before you get the car. And I was like, yeah, okay. I'm pretty sure that when a new Mercedes-Benz arrives from Germany, it doesn't have upholstery falling off the roof.
The Jag did that we drove the F-Pace SVR. The upholstery was coming off. Look, I think that with the Model X, even the press cars that we drove, and you would think that the press cars would be the best built of the lot of them. Mm. There was a panel gap in one of them that I could fit my pinky finger in. It was unbelievably bad. So you're going to
say something else there, Paul.
Yeah, no, the panel gaps aren't that bad. So yeah, it is nasty. And I think they have sorted out most of those issues. Like my Model 3 came with paint issues and they had to fix it. And I said to them, you need to show me what you've fixed, because I'm not going to go and discover a month later that there's some panel on this car that looks shit. And to their credit, they showed me what they had fixed and I could not spot the difference. But the fact that you have to fix cars when they get here is incredible. Okay,
what I don't understand, so you can buy a Tesla base or entry level for what, 65 grand Model 3?
Yeah, that's 70 now.
70? And yep. What do you get? And what, you paid like 110 for the performance?
I paid 103 on the road.
Okay, so what do you get for the extra 30-odd grand?
Well, the difference is the entry level, I think, is 0 to 100 in like 5 seconds or something like that. It's rear-wheel drive and it has a smaller battery. Then you step up to the long range, which is all-wheel drive and faster, and that one's about 85 or 90 grand. Then the performance is the fastest, which is 0 to 100 in, I think, 3.2, and then that's all-wheel drive. It comes with the better brakes, the bigger wheels, and then we picked the white interior for ours as well, so it's like a vegan material. Yeah. I honestly don't give a fuck whether it's leather or not, but I just thought it looked better. So yeah, you're getting all of that stuff. You get the high-end sound system, and the sound system in this car is the best I've ever heard.
Is it a bespoke componentry?
Yeah, I gotta say that was one of the main reasons I got the Model X too, because the sound system they had in that car I drove was absolutely sensational. Yeah, it really was.
It's the best you've ever heard. Like, it is insane. And what they did is they hired a whole stack of engineers from Bang & Olufsen and said, go and design the sound system for this car. What people don't know is that a lot of car manufacturers, like an Audi, for example, when they team up with Bang & Olufsen to develop a sound system, the car's already built, and then B&O needs to work around the structure of the car. Mm. And that is obviously not going to be entirely optimal, because you can't make it perfect. Mm. Whereas what these guys do, because they don't have any branding on any of the speakers, they go and find the best speakers on the market. And as part of the car's design, they integrate the speakers. So when you crank this sound system, it just blows you away. And one of the stories that I don't know if I should say this, but one of the stories that we're working on is a blind sound test comparison, where we get an automotive sort of a sound expert and put them in a couple of cars, like a high-end Rolls Royce, a Tesla Model 3, you know, some other car with an expensive sound system, and just see if they can spot the difference. Because I think that's what sold it for me as well, that the tech in the car is complemented by great sound system and the car handles nicely. It sort of it is hard to fault from that regard. So
and what
is
about
the,
updates?
Is the Tesla ad over now, Paul?
How many updates have you received in terms
probably
of...
Probably 10. Right. And the updates are great. Like, to give you an idea...
Wasn't that one where they accidentally disabled your airbags for 24 hours? I remember they did one.
No. That was... they actually disabled the airbags because there was another fault that they needed to... Which was a fault with Bosch. It was a Bosch supplier fault. So they disabled the airbag until the car could be fixed. But to give you an idea of over-the-air updates, we had... Tesla decided to introduce Sentry mode. So the car has... all these cameras on the car, and they enabled a feature that allows you to use all the cameras as a dash cam. So overnight, I got a car that has cameras that face forwards and backwards and on the sides. Then they enabled Sentry mode, which allows the car to be recording all the time. And there's countless videos on the internet now of people vandalizing Teslas, and these Muppets don't realize that they're getting recorded from four different angles while they vandalize the car. It's just features like this. They rolled out Netflix on the car, so you can watch Netflix while it's charging.
Are you serious?
And it's all free. Like, you don't pay a cent. You get these updates for life. So, look, it's pretty cool in that regard in terms of the tech. But it's not going to be everyone's cup of tea. And obviously people that aren't as smart as me, like Elbors, won't ever understand how impressive it is.
But let's face it, it's the only decent full EV that's, moderately exciting on the market currently. Right.
No, I like the iPace. The iPace is exciting.
Does it have to look so ugly though? That's my problem with the Model 3. The front of it It just looks like they wanted it not to be as good looking as the Model S, so they just deliberately made it ugly.
I don't think it's ugly. I don't think it's good looking, but I think the Model Y is ugly. I think the Model X is ugly. I don't think the designs of their cars, like the Cybertruck, is interesting because I thought that was a joke when they rolled that
car.
But that's a prime example. You think that looks good, and I think, Tony, you like the look of that as well.
Yeah, I love it.
But a lot of people think it looks crazy. So I think the styling stuff is entirely subjective. You know, it's hard to land on a middle ground
there. Yeah, but I think everyone can agree that the Model S is a very aesthetically pleasing car. Like, yeah, it does everything right. And, you know, I obviously don't want to take
sales away. It's fucking boring now, man.
It is pretty boring. But, you know, they took a lot of cues from Aston for that car, especially the Rapide. Yep. And it does look quite similar in its proportions. But, fuck, it's a good-looking car. I actually really like the Model S. I wish they would update it. I feel like that car has been around since the beginning of time now, and it really hasn't changed all that much.
Yeah, the design hasn't. They installed LED lights and a few other bits and pieces, but that car's about to get a major design update, but they've actually updated the drivetrain and the suspension on that car beneath the skin, and I'm excited to see what they come up with from that Nürburgring testing they did with, you know, when they took on Porsche and all that sort of shit.
I tell you what, Paul, I reckon we need to give your car to ATCO. I want to see what it can do on that track in relation to that.
I would genuinely like that. The brakes are terrible for track driving, but it has they've installed a new feature, a track mode, that allows you to increase the regen mode in the car so that you get supplementary braking so you don't overheat the brakes. But I would love that. Let's actually organise that.
Since you can't leave your house for 6 weeks, why don't you ship the car up?
Why don't you get fucked? I'm not going to let him drive my car.
I'll get you a car. ATCO would treat it fairly.
Yeah.
I'm not concerned about ATCO. I'm worried about Elbors being near it.
Yeah,
I know. What about if he gets in and starts moving the wheel like he did, like deranged lunatic that
Can
time?
We just very quickly point out.
I think you're confusing me with an old CEO of Car Advice here.
No. I saw it with my own eyes. He like shuffles the wheel mid corner. It's the most disturbing
thing in a WRC round.
Was it a form of Parkinson's?
Oh my god! All right, let's move on from me. New cars, Elbors. Run us through the new cars that you've bought,
mate. I have bought three cars new. One of them we actually bought two of, which was the Land Rover Discovery Sport that Tony and I both bought the exact...
Stupidly bought the most expensive model you could buy.
Literally the most expensive model with everything ticked. And I have to say, of all the cars I've owned, that car had the best fucking sound system. Honestly, that Meridian sound system was... It was like a 1400 watt...
23 speakers or something.
Yeah, it was worth it. Whatever $12,000 option, whatever the fuck it is we ended up paying for the sound system. But... my car was so problematic that I actually just kind of gave it back to Land Rover because it had a couple of weird issues. You know, like it had the trims on the doors that kept falling off, which, Tony, you had the exact same issue.
The bottom cladding, that's a design fault.
That's crazy.
But you're talking about a car that's meant to be able to go places. Mine never left the tarmac. It just occasionally I opened the door and there was a slight bit of grass, and I'm talking about, like, you know, normal amount of grass that if this thing came near and you tried to close it, it would just fall off. And you're just like, what the fuck? Like, how has this never been tested on grass?
I had the same thing. Danny would come home and I'd see the piece missing on one of the sides. I'd say, please tell me you have that. Please tell me you picked up that piece and put it in the boot. Fortunately, she had enough sense to pick that thing up. But honestly, I was going to just hit Krieger up and at Land Rover and say, mate, come on now. I need a piece of that cladding. Looks like it's falling apart.
Express posted.
But unlike you, our boys, I had no issues.
Bullshit, man. You had a full four-wheel drive failure, drivetrain failure.
No, I didn't.
Yes, you did. You got the dementia.
No, the only thing that ever happened was the cladding.
What that are you car, talking about? That car, you had full four-wheel drive failure. You had to wait 6 weeks for parts from the UK. I remember that car. What are you talking about? You've literally forgotten.
I have forgotten.
What are you talking about?
I'll tell you what helps. That money that they give Tony, that helps him forget all of these things.
But my car, it wasn't just that. My car had this really unique feature where it would randomly turn off. And I'm not talking about the auto stop start feature. I actually worked out that if you did a really solid left-hand turn, like, and put a bit of G-forces into it, the car would literally shut down.
What the fuck?
And it was a bit of an issue. The first time my wife told me about it, I did that typical male thing where I said to her, oh, you know, honey, you must have pressed the button. Or you must have
done something wrong.
Yeah, I just said everything that was obviously clearly her fault. And then once it happened to me while I was driving, and I actually nearly fucking lost the car, and I thought, right, okay, well, that's not really nice. I took the car back, and of course, typical dealers, they tell you there's nothing wrong with it. Never had that problem before, or, you know, it's fine. We drove around the block and there's nothing wrong with it. Anyway, did it again. I finally took it back, and they sort of basically went through the car and ended up realizing there was a loose earth wire somewhere under the dash that,
random,
under certain, I don't know what would cause it, but every once in a while it would short out something in the car and it would turn it off. And I'm just like, how is that even possible out of the factory, right? Mm. Anyway, that led to me going, fuck that, I'm not buying another Land Rover. And instead I bought a Jag. So,
but hold on. But on that Discovery Sport, when that came out, it was by far the best looking mid-sized SUV on the market.
I still think it's fucking great. And the new one is a lot.
It's even better, right? We got the bad engine.
Well, yeah. Oh, that's the other thing. That 9-speed transmission in that car was horrendous. It always started in second gear, and I felt like you had to put your foot down about 2 seconds before you tried to leave. Otherwise, nothing would actually happen. And
it was pretty slow.
Yeah, and that was one of the main reasons that my wife wanted to get rid of it, because she actually felt like, you know, she couldn't get out of the intersections and stuff, because she wasn't, you know, she didn't want to predict the intersection. She wanted to accelerate when she needed to rather than accelerate before the car goes past 2 seconds earlier.
Was it expensive to service? I think a lot of people here, European and especially JLR, are they expensive to maintain and run?
I saw that within 8 months, because it was so bad.
Well,
and I had to service
it. Well, it's about $1,000, $1,200 for a major. I don't recall ever being surprised by the service charges at the dealer.
Yep.
For me, look, I got to say, look, it had a lot of kit in it, that car. Unfortunately, like you with your Supra, 6 months after they came out with the Ingenium, so we got we got the tired old trusty diesel,
the Mondeo engine,
basically, and it was bloody noisy, and you know, it certainly
was mainly the transmission. That 2.2-liter diesel just had so much lag, and when this thing had nine gears and it started
a lot of lag,
it just never went anywhere, and it was quite frustrating to drive, I gotta say. But I tell you what, the Windsor leather in that car was like,
it was so soft,
it was unreal. It was such a nice car to be in when it worked,
For sure.
Isn't that the funny thing that a lot of people mention about JLR cars? They're such nice cars when they work.
And they look insane. Yeah. They look fantastic, right?
They look sensational. Yeah. And the interiors are beautifully presented. But yeah, it is a curious point. And it's a real shame, because that brand has so much heritage. And you
so
often
much
hear
potential
about
potential, too.
Yeah. You often hear about the reliability issues people have. And it's like, oh, if only they were just slightly better.
Yeah. Okay. So you ended up with a Jag.
So when I got rid of that thing, it was around the time the F-Base was coming out, and I'd just gone to Europe to drive it. I think it was in like Macedonia, somewhere random. It was the most random place that I went and drove it, through the most dangerous roads I've ever been on in my life. We were going absolutely flat out. It was the most fun I've ever had on a car launch, I think. And I came back and I said to my wife, let's buy an F-Base. And she's like, isn't that built by the same company? And I was like, yeah, but they do a really good job.
Completely different.
Yeah, that's right. And it's actually really funny, because that year we were at the Grand Prix, I think it would have been 2016, and they had, like, you know, the F-Pace was out there, and I showed it to my wife. She goes, oh, it looks really nice. And then when they had the local launch for the F-Pace, I actually met Ian Callum, and I got him to spec the car in terms of the color, the interior, the wheels, and basically, yeah, what he would like. And you know, he did a great job. I still actually have that car. It's like sitting
there. It does look good.
That red is amazing.
It is really nice. And the only thing is, I remember when we test drove it, we test drove the 30D, which is the 3-liter diesel,
and which I love. Right,
that's the one. And my wife said, "Yeah, let's get this one." And I was like, "Oh no, she's never going to notice." So I bought the 20D, and she's never noticed. I just imagined it, and it's been a 20D since. And that engine's actually really good. And the 8-speed ZF, which is a proper transmission that pushes, you know, it's the thing with the F-Pace is it's actually a rear-wheel drive bias car, so it drives properly, and it doesn't weigh much. I love that car. It's actually, you know, it's really funny, the door, the black little cladding on the door, and the F pace has also fallen off twice since I've owned it. It's actually loose at the very this very moment. Yeah, it's actually loose at this exact
moment. What are you doing to these doors?
Nothing. No, they just use glue that doesn't work in Queensland.
It just catches on things and just rips straight off. Like it.
Yeah, it's crazy. And, I actually, the first time I took it in for a warranty repair for the little door thing, they actually had to like replace the entire door cladding and have it repainted red because it comes in one piece, right? And anyway, and then when it got loose again, I actually just put some super glue because I was like, I don't want to do this again. So and that seems to have held it up for about 6 months, but it's loose now again. And I'm just like, fuck, like can't be that hard to do this right. But interesting. And then
that's one of the best looking SUVs on the market.
I still get people asking me about it, and the car is close to 4 years old now. And like I got one of the first ones in the country, so it still hasn't had any design changes to it. No. I genuinely
would. That's about to roll out now.
Yeah, interior. I love that Velar interior. I'd love to have that in my car.
Yeah, sensational.
It is really nice. But so and the other car that I've bought new is an Audi Q2. So I needed a car for my parents, and that was the one I ended up with. After
you got a bargain with that, didn't you? Like,
man, I got like 20 grand off from the dealer just by haggling for a brand new car. And actually, you know what? I was shopping against the Hyundai Kona, and I ended up buying Audi for less money than what I could get the Hyundai.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Holy shit. Yeah, those Konas, they go up to about 42 grand.
Yeah, well, the guy wouldn't go down. I ended up paying just under 40 for this Q2 with all the safety stuff. And, the other thing is, like, I really wanted to buy a Lexus for my parents because the build quality of those cars is really good and all that.
Which one? The
At UX? The time, the UX wasn't out. It was going to be an NX. And I was happy to pay more.
NX was a bit of a shit box.
It was okay. Like, for them, it was okay.
It's a fucking interior. You just can't live with that console.
They'd never used the infotainment system, so it was never a big deal. But the reason I ended up with the Audi was because the Lexus safety system was nowhere near as good as the Audi. The Audi's got rear AEB. It's got forward AEB that works up to 160. And it just worked really well when I drove it and I tested it and stuff like that. And there's a couple of times where I've even driven that car myself where I've been reversing. And you get near something and it actually just stops. Like, it's really good. And I'm really happy with it. And my parents have really liked it. And it actually always steers on the highway. You don't have to ever turn it on. It always helps you steer on the highway, which for my dad, who's in his mid-70s, is a really good thing. That's the car that I've been most proud of buying because it served its purpose really well. And despite what everybody thinks, it's done about 40,000 Ks and not had one fucking issue. So... and it's got that DSG transmission that everyone says has something happens to it. But after this podcast, I expect it to catch on fire. So.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
I really like the look of that.
I want to know one of the things that I think is worth reporting on here. I paid full price for my Supra and the Tesla. Mm. Elbors, you mentioned the discount you got there for the Q2. What price did you pay for the F-Pace and the Discovery Sport?
I think the Discovery Sport was close to 80. Is that right, Tony? Because we paid the same amount. I think it was 78.
I think 75, but I think we got a bit of a deal. But it was
because you were buying two of them, right?
Yeah, we bought two at the same. Both the identical Corus Grey with black accent. I guarantee we started the trend on that car because every single car that came out after that was Corus Grey and black highlights.
Well, we did a lot of stories in those cars. So I think people looking at that would have probably spec'd it similar. But the F-Pace. Man, I don't think I got a great deal on that. I think it was in the 80s from memory, like the mid-80s from memory, what I paid for it, which is pretty much retail. I mean, I actually think if I'd haggled hard, I would have done a better deal on that. But, I'm still driving that car. It's done about 50,000 Ks, and it's still a great car.
What about your other cars? Tell us about your other stuff.
Well, hold on, Tony. Okay. We're going to jump over to you for new cars stuff, first. Okay. And before we do, I think it is worth pointing out that I think a lot of people think that we, just because we're in the industry, will get like a 50 grand discount cars. And,
no way.
You can get I can tell you one thing. You can get a better deal from the dealer than you can get from the manufacturer.
You can. You definitely, without the hassles.
Yeah,
I guess if we were at the last place, we'd probably get some good deals on MGs, but that's entirely unrelated. Tony, new cars that you've bought.
I have two, actually. So it started with the Mustang Bullitt.
Yes, tell us about that.
I got to say, it was a bit of an impulse. I sort of read a review on it, saw a journal. Sorry?
Was it in Wheels again? Did you read something?
No. I saw a journal. Not this time. I saw a journal in San Francisco driving it around. It's actually a female journo, just forgotten her name, but did a really good job and sort of went down the same roads as the as Steve McQueen did in the original Bullet movie. And it just sort of, you know, I'd sort of grown up with that movie, watching it with the old man. And I thought, yeah, you know, the fact that it's limited, I probably wouldn't have bought a GT.
Now, hold on a
second. I think your idea of limited is slightly
limited.
Yeah, I know that. But I've made it. Look, they brought in 700.
That's right. They've sold
in Australia, not worldwide. In Australia,
they've sold more of those than they have Citroens, Peugeots, Land Rovers, and Jaguars.
Maybe, but look, I paid full whack for that car. In fact, I couldn't get one. I actually rang the Ford PR guy, and I said, "Damo, what's the story with that?" He just laughed and said, "He said, you're kidding. They went months ago." So here's the first time in my life I've had the money to actually buy this car, and I can't get one for love or money. And I just went around and rang about 10 dealers, and I put my name down. And about a week later, I got a call from Peter Warren Ford in Sydney. Peter Warren, I think he does a million brands, but he's got a Ford dealership there. And he said, "I've got one. It's got the optional Recaro seats." And I remember ringing Josh Dowling, and I said, "What do you reckon about these fucking? I really like the normal seats. I just want it stock." And he said, "No, fuck that. Get the Recaros. Not only will they be better, but the car will be worth more with them." And I just said yes to that deal, and I had to put like $5,000 down. And the car came like months later, you know, a lot of months later. And I'd actually been talking to Kurt Dupre, who also writes for us, and was at the old place. And he had done a story about Rob Herod Performance in Melbourne, and said, "This guy is the absolute go-to guy for modifying.
He's a legend.
Rob's a legend.
Fantastic
Ford guy. Performance." And I got so into this. I've never modified a single car in my life, except for maybe sway bars on my original Cortina. But Kurt had got me so, and I spoke to Rob and I rang him up and I said, "What do you think I should do to this?" And he said, "Look, let's do the wheels and the tires." And so he swapped out the 19s for 20s, put 305s on the rear, and the 275s that were on the rear went up to the front end. And the Ford Performance sway bars were swapped in for the regular stuff, and the Ford Performance springs were swapped in. The other stuff was basically thrown in the bin. And this car now, and I basically drove it back from his place in Melbourne, having not driven it prior to that. And I got to tell you, this car can keep up with a 911 now. Certainly mine.
But also, I got to tell you, Tony, when I first saw your car, it looks sensational with those wheels. But
and it's
when
lowered.
I got in it,
it's lowered.
Yeah, it's lowered. When I got it in, I'm like, this is going to be the firmest fucking car known to man. And the ride is unbelievably good.
It is unbelievable, right? I mean, it's got adaptive suspension. So, and that really does work.
Have you changed the exhaust? Because it fucking sounds good too.
No, man, it's absolutely stock.
Sounds amazing.
Yeah, and right. I think the Bullet sounded a lot louder because apparently the story is that designers spent a year trying to make the identical sound that the Bullet car in the movie made. So I think it is a slightly different exhaust system, or certainly an exhaust tune. But yeah, it's way louder than a stock. It's actually louder than the spec R. Believe it or not. And I love the color. I love the fact that it's got no Ford badging or no Mustang badging on it. It has that really dark blacked out grille. The wheels are, of course, changed. So Rob gets these wheels that are forged from a made in the States. And they're different. They're multi-spoked, of course, like 10 spokes instead of 5 on the original. But I heard the original were just cheap Chinese knockoffs, not the original American torque thrust wheels. So that's why I was more than happy to just ditch the I've got them sitting on a bench at the moment, the original wheels, in case I ever sell the car, you know.
No, it is a beautiful car, and yeah, mate, Herod is such a good bloke that I think he's doing great stuff.
I think, Paul, the story is that he's the third largest Ford Performance dealer globally.
Yeah, he's so well connected internationally with the Ford world, even through the OEMs. They worked with him for the R-Spec as well. He builds that car at Ford's.
And didn't he build the factory. Dick Johnson one as well?
That's right, yeah, Dick Johnson one. He does the cars at the old Ford factory, so he's fully involved in it, and he knows his stuff, and he's such a nice guy.
Yeah.
And, okay, what was the price you paid? I know you said it was full whack. How much was it roughly?
I paid 86, and then I spent another $8,000 with Rob doing wheels, tires, and suspension. Yep, okay. He tried to get me to he pleaded with me to upgrade the brakes to 400 mil with eight pot calipers.
Yep.
And they not only do they look good, but if you go on track with this car, you'll need those.
Yeah.
Not that there's anything wrong with the stock brakes, but they will not stand up more than two or three laps on a track, if that. So I do want to do that. And, of course, the driving the spec R recently has got me now thinking about the supercharger, because I thought the spec R would be a shocking car to drive. Too much power, overwhelming the rear axle, but it actually isn't. And my car would be fantastic with that. So that's another thing I'm going to do with the brakes eventually.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
It's a fully modded car.
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's move on to second.
We forgot Tony's 911.
Oh, no. That's where we're going to. Yes, the second-hand cars we bought, and we may as well just get Tony and I out of the way. So, Tony, run us through your 911 and why it's so fucking slow.
Well, here's the thing. My first experience with a 911 was as an 18-year-old in the States, in California. I was going to school.
Someone and stole
my
one?
My shitbox Audi. I had this thing called an Audi Fox that some other rich Australian guy had lent me Audi to drive Fox. Around. An Audi Fox. I've never even seen one.
Googling yet. It now. Oh, my God, yeah. That's ugly.
Yeah, so that was the Audi Fox in a British Racing green. I had the little Aussie flag on the side of the – on the back window, so people might recognize me as an Aussie tennis player. And anyway, that car, literally the rear end dropped out of it one day, and I literally was living on the skin of an oily rag. Like, I was lucky to have $5 in my pocket, like, on any given day. And I rang up the university I was at had billeted to me with this wealthy Californian family with a tennis court. Anyway, this guy was a banker, and he had a 911 T with a 3-liter engine in it, in silver. And you got to remember, I think it was a 69 or 70, and they were much lighter back then. It probably weighed like 1,000 kilos with a 3-liter engine in it. And when the car broke down, and he said, "Oh, don't worry, Tony, just take the Porsche tomorrow." And I'm thinking, I'm trying not to laugh and smile. I waited till the whole family had left the house, and then I kicked this thing over in the garage, key and all, and bang, did that fire up. And I spent the entire day ringing my tennis playing mates. And I said to them, "We're not going to practice today, guys. We're driving this fucking thing to Malibu and back on the PCH1. Like, let's just get all your fuel money, get all your money, and let's fill it up and let's just go racing." And it was the most marvelous experience. I felt that no fucker could beat me in this car. Like, I was out to race anything that would have a go, because this thing was just nailed to the tarmac. And here's the crazy thing. I was driving on PCH1 with two other mates in the car, and we looked across the freeway, and there was another white 911, and we fucking gave this guy the full stare, and it was fucking Robert Redford, the original Hollywood, leading man of the 80s and to some extent 90s. And anyway, this guy was a Porsche lover, and he looked at us, and from that moment on, I've always wanted a 911. So when the time came, we all got out of Caravice quite well, and I actually ordered with Al Borsman. I think he told me that he'd ordered a 911 GT3 RS, and I said, "Fuck, I'm going to order one."
GT2.
I ordered the GT3 RS. You ordered the GT2, but it was still 450 grand. And I told my wife I'd done this. She fucking nearly flipped. she said, "What do you mean you're actually going to spend $450,000 on a single car?" I said, "Yeah." She said, "No, you're fucking not. There's no way." So I was in Alabama at the time, actually. We finished a launch, and I'd gone down to see some friends where I used to go to school. And anyway, look, I had this argument, and I came back, and actually, the lady we were staying with, some good friends, said to me that they all jumped on my wife's side and said, "You can't spend $450,000 on one car." So I was I was ambushed, and I looked online. And I found this one found a Carrera RS with all the performance options. It was a 2013 Carrera RS in white. White's not my favorite color. I was always trying to go for silver. And anyway, I was sort of texting the guy that apparently had this car, and he lived in up at the North Shore of Sydney, and I just got the feeling it was Matt Braids, who used to run V8 supercars, and I just sort of put it out there. Is this Matt Braid? And he says, is this Tony Crawford? I've known this guy for 20 years, right? He was running Volvo, Volvo Australian CEO. Then he was the CEO of V8 Supercars. And anyway, he'd ordered a GT3 RS, my dream car. And he was putting his car up. It had 18,000 Ks on it. He wanted 200K and actually wanted 220K. And I came back and I offered him 200, and he said, fuck, man, I got to get rid of it. Anything with a 2 in front of it's yours. And I said, done. And so I sort of bought it without testing it. So he came around to the office, and I said, look, I don't even want to drive it. Just take me around the block. I want to see if there's any. And I know Matt is a fastidious Porsche owner, and nothing, there wasn't a scratch or a mark on this car, inside or out. And I bought the car. And like I said, it had before. Sports chrono, sports exhaust, PDK gearbox. It had the sports steering wheel with paddle shifters, which was like a $4,000 option. The car was like $300,000, and I found out it had been built for the dealer principal of Porsche Brisbane. And then Matt bought it with 18,000 Ks on it, and I bought it with 18.5 or something. And
jeez,
look, I think that car's actually, I think you just can't find a career RS of that vintage with those sports options on it, with those performance options.
It's just a shame it's so fucking slow.
It was slow because you two fucks were in the back of it. And, I mean, I'm adding 170 kilos to the poor old one. Ordinarily, it only weighs 1430 kilos, but when the car weighs as much as the fucking school bus, I mean, it doesn't fucking go.
My
dream is to get a 911 Turbo S and a GT3 RS, which I think is the world's best track car. I just love that car on track.
Honestly, was it you that was sitting in the back, Paul? I can't remember. I think
yeah, I had my knees around my neck. It was unbelievable.
When we were in the car and you caught it, I was expecting something to happen, but it just sort of made a lot of noise.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, I got to tell you, for dream car, a quick dream car thing, I've got to have a Lamborghini Evo. It's the best fucking car I've ever driven on track at Bahrain. That car was limitless in its ability. Anyway,
Jesus.
What about you guys?
Okay, so I'll quickly just run. I've literally only bought one car secondhand, and it was an Australian car. I have an affinity with Australian cars, and I was actually
Paul. It is the greatest Geelong bomber of all time. Like, fuck me.
Oh my god! I was actually, instead of the Supra, going to buy a GTSR W1, and I came very close to buying one. They had a they had like a pre-production car, and it had something like 30,000 Ks.
It's still like 250 or something.
Fucking expensive.
Is that the big wing? Is that the one with the giant wing on the back? No.
No, it's got a normal size wing, but it had an LS9. And I remember very fondly, we had the car for 3 days at Car Advice, and I fell in love with that thing. It had P0 Trofeo R tires. So it had like an R compound tire. It was an absolute beast of a car. But the one that I found was a GTS that they retrofitted with the LS9, and it was one of the prototype cars. But anyway, it got sold almost immediately, and I didn't want to pay fuck knows how much for an actual other one. So I've gone back to the Australian cars, and I found just randomly on an auction a VP Series 2 SS Commodore 1993 with the HSV enhancement kit. And I, much like your wife, Tony, mine is not very impressed when I spend money on things that aren't her.
Well,
and,
I didn't tell her. That's the biggest thing.
Well, yeah, like, exactly.
Staying, so, I didn't tell her at all. She nearly flipped.
Well, exactly. That was my strategy.
I'm planning on keeping it in Brisbane, Tony. I remember when you first bought the Mustang, you said to me, can you store this car for me for a little while?
It was so fucking weird because I didn't tell you I also bought a BMW R19 motorcycle. which she strangely agreed to, which I thought was so bizarre. Weird.
She was hoping you would die in a car accident. Yeah. Like,
probably still is.
I had the same issue you had, Tony. I basically bid on this, assuming I wasn't going to win it, And then I was sitting on the couch and I got an email saying you were the successful bidder. And I thought, fuck, I need to tell her about this car. And I told her, and predictably she was very, very fucking unimpressed, especially with the fact that the car was in WA. I hadn't seen it and only saw pictures of it. So I had to get it freighted over and it had to sit in the garage. It was a bit of a clusterfuck. But anyway, I love the car to bits. It's in like virtually... it's all stock. I'm going to keep it stock. But I traced the lineage of the car, and it was sold to a buyer in Western Sydney. And then the car was sent to HSV, where it was fitted with an ECU and a sports exhaust. And then basically it was sent back to Sydney, where it spent most of its life before going to WA, where it spent the rest of its time. So I think the Australian cars are so fascinating to me, and the special ones are going up in value. And I'm very curious to see what else I can get my hands on. But that's me now.
You still want that W1?
Oh, fucking oath. Yeah, if I can get my hands on a W1 that...
HP did that? How much kilowatts did that
have? I think it was 470.
70, yeah, it was.
Or 30 or so. I can't remember.
So it was an LS9 Corvette engine.
That's right, yeah. It's a fucking monster truck. And the thing is just... did the fact that it was made in Australia and that they actually did this, no one thought they would, I think is pretty impressive. And it's just a special car to me. I think a lot of people gel with cars for different reasons. And for me, this one is just something that resonates with me. Now let's jump over to you, Alborz. You have quite a car collection. Start chronologically with what you bought first and then work your way up from there.
Yeah, I guess like you guys, I sort of have things along the way that I really had a bit of a connection to that I felt like I needed to own. The first car I bought when I really couldn't afford it was an Aston Martin Vantage.
Yeah, you fucking told me your mum lent you most of the money, dude.
I had to borrow at least. Well, my plan was to. This is like so. Somewhere in, I think it was 2015. We sold a bit of the company to Macquarie Bank, Macquarie Leasing, I should say, actually. And both Tony and I sold a bit of our shares. If you remember, Tony, it was a bad idea.
Probably shouldn't have. Yeah,
we sold. We ended up selling the company for three times more than that. But anyway, good investment for Macquarie. I got a bit of money, and obviously, you know, when you get a bit of money, the first.
I'm trying to think how much we actually got. It was like 130 grand or something.
No, it was a bit more than that, 170? Man. Yeah, it's close to 200. I can't remember exactly what it was, but usually the smart thing would have been to pay off my very large mortgage at the time. Instead, I started looking for a Vantage, and the reason for that is when we first started Car Advice, the first car company, like a prestigious or, you know, supercar sort of company that really took us under their wing was Aston.
They gave us the first launch overseas we ever had.
Yeah, well, that's right. And, well, they gave it to you and they consistently kept giving it to you. But anyway.
Sorry about that, yeah. I reluctantly didn't want to give that up. I'm sorry. I had a relationship going. I didn't want to spoil it.
Yeah.
You know what it's like.
Yeah, exactly.
Like you, though, that car is – I really feel bad that I don't own a Vantage. Like,
you own all the Aston Martin gear. Like, you keep getting sent free shirts and jackets and shit.
Well, Dave Adams just brought you over a bunch of gear. Did you say you'd lost that?
Oh, did you give it to me?
I got to say, your Aston is the color I love, and the noise of that fucking car is just off the Richter.
Sounds incredible.
Yeah, so look, I literally spent at least 6 to 12 months looking. I've been looking for one for even before we sold those shares, daydreaming. But one day, this car came up on car sales, and it didn't even have any fucking photos, right? Like, that's how poor the ad was. And I just remember it said the color was orange, and I was like, there's not many fucking Vantages that are orange. In fact, I know the only Vantage that's orange is an N400. And I Googled it and my own story came up. And I found my own story on the car and I read my own story because I had no fucking... You just forget what you write 5 minutes after you finish writing it. But I read about it and it was a Nürburgring edition they built. They only built, I think, 128 of them, half coupes, half spiders. And only three came to Australia. And only one was orange. So one of them was a coupe, which was white. And the orange one was the only one that was a manual. And I called a guy that we both knew at Aston and I got the full history of the car. And I was like, so I called this guy up in Melbourne and I said to him, hey, can you do me a favor? Can you go to the back of the car and just tell me if there's a little green flag that looks like a racetrack? And he said, oh, yeah, I don't know what that is, but yeah, there is one of them in the back of the car.
Don't Google it.
Yeah, that's it.
That never seemed to check it in case he got wind of it.
So that was the Nürburgring sticker. So this was a very limited edition car. And I just said to the guy, I didn't even, it's the first time I've never haggled on a car. I just, because the price was, it was priced as if it was a normal Vantage, and it isn't. And in the UK, they're now selling for a good 60, 70% more than a standard Vantage. So
shit.
I just went, I'll take it. And he's like, oh okay. And so I fucking flew down as fast as I could. And I went to the place with Paul, if you remember Paul.
That's right. We took it for a test drive.
We took it for a test drive. Fuck, it sounded good.
Sounds incredible.
It's got a full titanium race exhaust in that car. And it's actually one of the loudest. I actually think it's, honestly, actually, if maybe not, maybe the Lambo, maybe, but this is one of the best sounding cars I've ever heard and still happens to be. Every time I fucking drive it, and I drive it a lot, it's actually sitting downstairs at the moment. And
you got me thinking, man. I really want one of those fucking Astons. I really do.
Honestly, man, I every time I go through a tunnel or something in that car, and it's a manual as well, and it just puts such a big smile on my face. It's actually quite a slow car. It's like 4.8 to 100. It's fucking slow,
Tony,
right?
Tony knows the feeling.
Yeah, that's it.
Is the Vantage S quicker?
Yes, it is. The Vantage S is quicker, but they changed
it as well.
Yeah, I think you could get a Vantage S manual. Yeah, I'm pretty sure you could. But
yep.
That was the last time and the only time, apart from the GT8 and the GT12, that they did a limited edition numbered Vantage. And only time they've ever done it in orange. It's called Carousel Orange after the corner at the Nürburgring.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah,
there you go. Holy shit.
Yeah, I love that car, man. It's the first proper car I ever bought when I absolutely could not fucking afford it. I remember I thought to myself, I'll put in half the money and I'll borrow the rest from the bank. And I went to the bank and the guy just laughed at me.
they didn't want to lend me a cent, man. I couldn't even get 300 grand.
A cent, and I had to fucking beg my mum for some money so I could buy the car, which was pretty embarrassing, I have to say.
Have a good sound system like the old Vantage?
Yeah,
did?
Man, it had a fucking great sound system. Every option on it ticked Alcantara everywhere. And anyway, I drove it home from Melbourne to Brisbane, and I drove it home. And like your wife, my wife wasn't impressed with the fact that I should have paid off the mortgage, but I bought a car. Anyway, I parked it downstairs, and the very fucking first night at about 2 a.m., the alarm went off, and it would not fucking shut off. Like it had a full alarm failure. So
holy shit!
That was my introduction to Aston Martin ownership, and I've loved it, and I've loved it ever since. I actually love that car. It's been very reliable.
Much was the car new?
I think the car was about 360 new.
Jesus, the Vantage.
Yeah, so it was the most, it was the special edition car. So it was obviously they just charged more money.
And what did you pay for it?
Not 360. I paid a lot less.
Tell us.
I paid a lot less for it. I paid in the mid ones for it, so it wasn't much.
That's cheap, man.
Yeah, it was, man. That's because I had no idea what it was.
Yeah, but also that was, I don't know what's happened in the past 3 or 4 years, but that was back when those cars, no one realized their value. That same car today would be probably an extra 50, 60.
Yeah, look, grand. It's a normal Vantage you can now get for about 100 for a good one. But this is not a normal Vantage. And as I said, I see them come up in the UK for sale, and they're going in the 130,000, 140,000 pounds. So
I've got to tell you, do you like your model, the looks of it, better than the current Vantage?
This car... That's the thing. This car was 90% designed by Ian Callum, and the last 10% was designed by Henry Fisker, the guy, Fisker. The only thing that Fisker changed was the rear light. So as Callum told me many years later after I bought the car, he actually had the F-type lights on the rear of the Vantage. When he left Aston, because, Ian had designed the DB9, and the Vantage really is a DB9 shrunk down. But when he left Aston to go to JLR, Fisker came in, and the only thing he changed was actually put the DB9 lights on the Vantage because he thought it looked made it more like a family of a car, not different. But it actually had the original; they had the F-type lights on it, so which then went on to the F-type. So
that is crazy.
Yeah, a bit random. But I do love that car. It's probably my favorite car of all the cars I own.
That is cool. I like that. Okay, then what happened after that?
Well, after that, when we sold the company, obviously, we weren't broke. So I must be the only – I would have been the only Aston owner that had no money to actually pay for fuel. it goes to – you know what, man? It actually goes to show, and this is the same for all three of us. It goes to show you that, you know, we loved cars so much that we were happy to send ourselves bankrupt in the process of owning
Pretty much.
I didn't even get to say this, but the main reason I bought the Aston was I just remember having the press car when I was in my early 20s and driving around in Brisbane. I just thought to myself, fuck, this thing is so good. I wish one day I could afford one of these. And when I couldn't, I still bought one. So, but the second car I ended up buying was a Mercedes-Benz SLS AMG, yeah. the Gullwing. Which
tell the truth, man. You only bought it because of the fucking doors.
Right? Much like the Model X, man. The only reason I wanted the Model X was because of the fucking doors. I love cool doors. I always grew up wanting a car with cool doors. But you know,
and it was your wedding car, if I remember.
Exactly. Yeah. The reason I bought it is when I got married. The folks at Mercedes-Benz Australia were really nice enough to give me a.
Remember driving that car, man? It wants to kill you.
He wanted to fucking kill you. And he had the world's worst windscreen wipers. I drove it back from Sydney. This wasn't my car. This was a black car. I drove it back from Sydney to Brisbane. I was going 80 in 110 zone getting overtaken by a truck because I couldn't fucking see. it was raining and the windscreen wipers basically didn't do anything to clean the windscreen. But so that was our wedding car. And many years later for my wife's anniversary, we're at the Grand Prix in Melbourne, and I found this perfect silver with red, so the original Gullwing spec car, and from a guy in Adelaide who still talks to me and tells me he regrets selling it. it's gone up by like 100 grand since I bought it. So I hardly drive that car, to be perfectly honest. It's an absolute bucket of shit to drive.
What's bad? It's not balanced, is it?
It's a GT, so it's the sort of car you go on the Autobahn with. It's got a fuck ton of power. Like, it's actually probably quicker than the Ferrari, to be honest with you, on a straight line. But it just doesn't turn. It's the steering is woeful, and
interior has dated like you wouldn't fucking believe.
Yeah, look, with the red leather in mind, it actually looks schmick still. But yeah, the infotainment system is horrendous. It doesn't even have Bluetooth audio streaming, so I've got a little dongle that helps make that happen. So, but the main reason I don't drive it is because it's got such enormous front overhangs that no matter where I take it, it will scrape the bottom. And I have replaced the underbody like plastics four times since I've owned it. And I must have put 2,000 Ks on it. So it just, and it's a horrible feeling when you hear that noise of the underbody scraping along, and it just fucking drives me mad. It doesn't have a lift kit. Never was an option with one. This doesn't have an option.
Do you think you'll keep that car?
I think so. Yeah, I think that's the sort of car. I have a bet with someone at Mercedes-Benz Australia that car will be worth $1 million in 10 years. And so far he's winning because it keeps going up. I know a friend of mine who just sold one for 560 grand. So I paid $400 for mine.
That's cheap.
Yeah, it was cheap. And there's the right spec too. So silver.
How many Ks on it?
Mine's done 12,000 from memory.
Holy shit.
Yeah, so sweet fuck all. It's not a great car, but it's a showstopper. Like wherever I go and I open the doors, people just go, "What the fuck is that?" Actually, I had some guy at a
petrol. No, that's what they say when you get out of it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that too. I had a guy at a petrol station ask me once, "Oh, who did the doors on your SLK?" I thought it's an SLS. He goes, "What's that?" I said, "It's a special car." He goes, "Oh, I didn't think Mercedes do cars like that. I thought it was like a custom job." And I said, "Yeah."
Oh my god.
Anyway. after that, what did I buy? Oh, the Speciale. This was one of those random things you really should do and think about a little bit more. We're at the Melbourne Cup in I should stop coming to Melbourne. I keep buying cars when I come there. I was at the Melbourne Cup.
I remember going there with you.
Yeah, I fucking hate horse racing, man. It's got to be the most boring fucking thing on the planet. And I was literally sitting there all day. Looking at cars on car sales, right? And At the time, I wanted to buy a Pista, right? At the time, I wanted to buy a Pista, and I had tried everything to buy one, and the only option was to buy a 488, park it for 6 months, lose like 50 grand, and then qualify for a fucking Pista. And I was like, fuck you, I'm not doing that. Like, that's ridiculous, right? I'm not doing that.
Now, that's the Ferrari way, right? You got to own a V8 before you can buy a V8. Is that
the rule from Ferrari Australia at the time? And it was only Ferrari Australia. No one else in the world had this rule. Was you had to own a 488 to qualify to order a Pista. Now, what they didn't realize was by doing this, everybody that had a 488 put an order in for a Pista and then immediately put their 488 for sale. So the reseller 488s just absolutely crashed and caused a lot of issues because a lot of people couldn't get what they thought they could get for the 488 and they couldn't afford the Pista. And anyway, had a really bad knock-on effect that I think they've learnt from now. But so because I couldn't get a pista or wasn't willing to lose $50,000 for absolutely no reason, I thought, why not the next best thing, which was a Speciale, which in my opinion, actually now, having driven both, I actually think is the better car anyway. It's the last naturally aspirated V8 Ferrari. And by all accounts, it's actually the only collectible car because I don't believe the pista is a collectible car at all.
No, and it sounds shit compared to the Speciale.
They all sound shit, all those Ferrari V8s.
Yeah, and look, I've always wanted the red Ferrari, and I always said that anyone that buys anything but a red Ferrari is a complete fucking moron. So I ended
up buying that. What color Speciale did you buy?
I ended up buying a yellow Speciale. idiot. Which, you know, even my kids today say, hey, Dad, when are you going to buy a red Ferrari? I'm like, a fuck. anyway, that car, honestly, is the loosest thing. It just wants to fucking drift. It's always stepping out. It's every time I drive that thing at speed, I come out and my hands are shaking a little bit. Like I feel like I've survived another day.
Why don't you change tires on that?
Like learn how to drive.
But what's it got? Trofeos or something?
It's got Trofeos at the moment.
Try some 4S's.
Nah, it's not a sort of car you put 4S's on. It had Michelin Cup 2s on it before and it was a bit better. Trofeos are amazing when they're on a track, but on the road, it's a little bit damp. Like if it's slightly fucking damp, deadly. It's basically fucking deadly. So I'm actually amazed that thing was a road legal tire. I've since then done a few things to it. I've changed the air filter, which is a huge deal, but I've also, the main thing I've done is put a Novitec exhaust on it, which, honest to God, when you come up to Brisbane next, Tony or Paul, I've got to take you for a drive because it is genuinely an F1 car in a tunnel. Like it's just, it screams to 9,000 RPM and it sounds like a fucking
Holy
F1
shit.
Car. I don't know.
I've been looking at normal 458s, which are down to about 330 grand now.
Yeah.
For a 2013 model. And I noticed their 0 to 100 is like 3.4. Yours is like 2.9, is it?
Yeah. Or 3. I think it's 3 flat. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's when I had it out for we did a tire test in it not too long ago, and I had a V-Box in the car, and it actually genuinely did a 3.18. So that wasn't.
It fucking feels quick
when
you're in the car, especially with that exhaust. Well, I haven't driven that exhaust, but you had some air filter replaced.
Yeah, it made a big difference, actually.
Huge difference.
Yeah,
well, can I say, I've got your fucking engine covers here still. I had to move the bed the other day, and I'm like, what's that noise? And I'm like, oh, it's his fucking engine covers.
What are they? Engine covers?
Yeah, these.
The guy who bought my car was a Ferrari collector, and what he did was he refused to buy, because my car's got everything carbon on it. There's nothing you could put, even, you know, it's just fucking carbon everywhere. And he refused to buy it with the carbon bits from Ferrari because he didn't want to pay LCT on the carbon, right? So he's like, so he bought the car and then bought all the carbon bits from Ferrari without LCT, which is obviously you probably saved about 40, 50 grand in LCT just by doing that because these carbon bits are ridiculous. So I've got all the original non-carbon bits for the car, the front, the bumper, all that shit, and I'd left the engine cover, the original engine, like the engine thing is all carbon, like all the the engine.
Oh, and the other thing's just metal, or
it's just metal, and that happens to be at the old car advice office. So when we all decided to leave in a spectacular fashion, they asked us to come and quickly remove the engine.
No, they said they would throw it away.
Yeah. So
they actually said they would throw it away. So I was like, well, I better go fucking pick that stuff up. And it's been sitting in my house ever since.
Yeah, I really need to get that off you. That you could probably put that on eBay for a couple of grand.
I'm fucking going to. That'd be great.
So that was the Speciale. That's the most expensive car.
Can I just tell everyone that right through the process of building and car advice, Ferrari never gave us a fucking car for the first 10 years, and even then they only gave us cars when we were in Italy to drive them.
You couldn't even sit in one.
Yeah, and Lambo was one of those early supporters of Car Advice back in our time at the factory in 2008 with Winkelmann. They were more than happy to give us two cars for 4 days to go on a trip. Ferrari, we couldn't get a fucking test drive out the fucking door. I feel you're disloyal for buying that Ferrari first before the Lambo, which you loved even more because of that because of that V10, naturally aspirated V10. And Paul will attest to that.
This is coming from the guy that owns a Porsche, also another company that at one stage told us to get fucked when we asked for a press car, if you remember correctly.
No, they banned us because we ran a story about a 911 Turbo crashing into a house and the guy survived.
That was the same guy that gave us the BMW line.
That's right.
No, it was a guy. He came around eventually. Yes, that is correct. It's funny because the old place writes a lot of stories about cars crashing these days, but let's not go into that. Look, the Speciale is a great car. It cost me $710,000, though, so it's a fucking lot of money.
Are you serious?
Yeah, it's a fucking lot of money. And
holy shit.
And you know what? The guy who I bought it from, so the guy who ordered it, the reason he sold the Speciale was because he wanted to buy an F12 TDF, right? And this guy had, I think at the time, 8 or 9 Ferraris. But because he hadn't bought one in the last 12 or 18 months, they wouldn't give him an F12 TDF. He wouldn't qualify for an F12. And we're talking about a guy who's literally had over 10 Ferraris in his life.
Unbelievable.
So he absolutely lost his fucking mind and just went, fuck you guys, I'm selling all my Ferraris. So he sold the Speciale to a guy in Hong Kong who also had another Speciale in Hong Kong, but he wanted one in Melbourne. So when he came to Melbourne, he had
of course
one.
You do.
Yeah, you know, like, because, you know, that's another thing. So this guy just, he had been sitting at Zagami's in Melbourne for about 18 months.
I remember going down to see it with you.
Yeah, he'd done about 500 Ks, and that was mainly by Zagami driving around the block just to keep it going.
It put me off a little bit, but
so hold on. What you're saying is this is effectively a rich man's temper tantrum.
Yeah, well, originally it was. Yeah, so it's the first car I've ever bought that costs more what I paid for it than what the guy who bought it paid for it. Not by much.
Have they gone up or gone down?
Look, the market at the moment, I think they've actually gone down about 50 grand. So mine would be about in the mid sixes now, I'd suspect. But You know what?
I'll give you 50 grand for it.
Yeah, it's one of those cars you just keep, I think.
Have you driven a normal 458?
I have now, yeah. And it's
what are they like?
Completely different car.
Really?
Yeah, the Speciale is really track focused. The suspension, honestly, that car, the Speciale in comfort mode or in bumpy road mode with that magnetic ride suspension is more comfortable than my Jag. Like it fucking hovers over things. Remarkable. It's such an amazing suspension system. I don't know how the fuck it came out of Italy. It must be German, but it is just the engineering in that car from a performance perspective is amazing. The only thing about that car that shits me is it doesn't have a fucking stereo. And you know, it's got carbon, even the doors are carbon, and it doesn't have a stereo. So every once in a while, you just kind of go, fuck, it'd be nice to listen to something. I have been seen in that car with headphones on, listening to music whilst driving it, which I think in a Ferrari is actually
sinful. are you telling me the normal 458 is not a great car, or?
I think it's a great car. And for the price, it's half the fucking price.
It's just different. Yeah.
So, but the engine is very different. Like, I know it's the same 4.5 liter V8, but it's actually very, very different internals. Like, the whole fucking internals of the Speciale are different to handle higher RPMs. And
I can't afford 700 fucking grand.
Yeah, but you'll get the same noise out of a 458 Italia with the Novitec
exhaust. Novitec, yeah.
So if you want noise, and that car still looks good. I actually prefer the 3 exhaust in the rear of the Italia.
That's what I love.
It looks good.
Yeah, it does. And after that car, I when we left Car Advice, actually, the next car I bought was our Lotus, was the Car Advice Lotus. And the reason I bought that car is because we bought that car at Car Advice for me to do Targa, you know, things you get to do when it's your own company. I fucking love that thing. Like, we spent so much money modifying that car, getting it ready for Targa. I had a really good time driving it. And when they decided at some point at Car Advice that, you know, a company that writes about cars should no longer own any. And they got rid of, I think, how many cars did we have? We must have had 8 or 9 cars. Yeah, it was a lot of cars, and they just put them all up for tender for anyone that wanted.
Was it before or after someone reversed into it?
When I had bought it, I didn't realize that a staff member at Car Advice had reversed over it, and then in their attempt to fix it, they put a sticker on top of it. But that's okay. I actually got Tony to go around and check the car like 30 fucking times, and he still missed the fact that someone had hit the mirror. exactly, right? At least because, man, it's fine. It's like, all right, anyway. I bought that Lotus. I fucking love that car. It's my track car now.
You bought it cheap.
I bought it so cheap. I reckon I could sell it for 20 grand more than I paid for it.
Yeah, exactly. It's a track car, right? I mean, you couldn't live with one of those cars.
You couldn't live with one of those cars, but you know.
Just getting in and out of it's a fucking nightmare.
It was actually in Morgan Park recently, and I was fucking banging out some great laps in it. And then I said to someone, actually, as I was leaving, oh, it's amazing. This is the first time I've taken it to a track where nothing has broken. Or that it, because you know, sometimes it just doesn't turn on. Sometimes it just goes into limp. It just has all these random fucking issues.
Well, that stupid alarm thing it's got is just bizarre. Where you got 30 seconds to actually start the car when you unlock it.
Yeah, and it, you know, it doesn't show the kilometers in. It shows it in miles, and it's an Australian delivered car. But and they can't change it. I mean, how fucking easy would it be to get the speedo to show? So and they're like, oh no, we can't do it. I'm like, why don't you just ask the fucking factory? Hey, can you just do a basic conversion on this LCD? It's got a, and it's the crappiest interior of any car I think I have ever been in, let alone own. So
and they're all like that, the Adams and all that sort of shit like that.
Yeah, it's yesterday after at full track day of thinking nothing's going to go wrong, the complete it had a full rear light cluster failure, so I have no indicators. I can't turn right anymore. I don't even know how that's possible after a track there, but yeah. So it's giving me that thing's giving me a lot of issues over the time I've owned it. But I still love it. It's an awesome car. I'm a sucker for British cars, and they've all been horrendously unreliable. where was I? I was after we left Car Advice and when we were unemployed. As you may find in this video that we did when we launched Car Expert, we were literally just bored out of our fucking mind. And I remember going to the original Huracan Performante, the Lamborghini Huracan Performante launch at Imola.
That would have been insane in itself.
Yeah, where Ayrton Senna died, unfortunately. And it was, you know, you remember certain events, and that was certainly one of the ones I remembered. I must have done 50 laps in that car because it was us and the I don't know, some random fucking country of journalists who didn't know how to drive. And after they did like half a lap, the instructors were like, yep, they're not allowed out on track anymore. And we just had,
Russian?
I think they were not Russian, but slightly more East. We just kept going out, and we had a couple of good guys from Oz on there and from a few other publications. And it was just such a memorable experience. And that car just has active aero and all sorts of shit. So yeah, whilst in this period of complete and utter unemployment, I found one in Adelaide, I just couldn't. It was orange.
Was that one of the fastest cars you've ever lapped?
It set the Nürburgring lap time record, and then that got broken by GT2 RS, which then got broken by the Aventador SVJ. So,
and the Tesla Model S.
Oh, for fuck! That couldn't make a lap happen if it tried. I found one in Adelaide. It was orange, and despite having left the orange brand, I still love that color. And I just sort of fell in love with it. I bought it sight unseen. Actually, I didn't even. Most of the cars, actually, all except for the Aston.
I'm the same.
Yeah, the Ferrari, the Lambo, and the SLS I bought sight unseen.
Well, can I just say quickly on Adelaide, it's weird that all these, you mentioned the Ferraris from there and this.
Oh, the SLS.
SLS. Porsche told me that their Adelaide dealership is, I think it was per capita, the most GT sales in the world.
Really?
Yeah, which is bloody amazing.
Yeah.
Very impressive.
Well, yeah. I think now that they've got the Bend down there, it's one of the best tracks in Australia.
Oh, it's fantastic,
I just can't think of a better track to drive than that track.
Tell you what, it's fucking hard to get cars from Adelaide to Brisbane, as I found out on two occasions. Like, not only is it fucking expensive, but like when I bought the, you know, when you buy something like a Lambo, you're like, fuck yeah, I can't wait to have this car. And then you call around, you're like, yeah, it'll be like 3 weeks before we can get it home. I'm like, what? No, fucking no, please get it here quicker. So that took a bit of patience and not trying to, you know, just waiting and waiting and waiting for it to show up. But man, the second I got into that car and I drove it, and it has got the world's most uncomfortable seats. I don't think if you tried to make something as uncomfortable, you would actually get those seats, because they've just gone for it's the race seats, and there's zero
racing seat.
But fucking hell, like I actually had bruises on me the first week I had that car, like. And
from your wife?
Yeah.
what are the normal seats on that car? Are they still sporty? Or?
The comfort seats, they look sporty, man, but compared to the bucket race seats where you actually fall into them and you can't get out. It's a one-piece carbon fiber seat. There's no adjustment. You just fall into it and hope for the best.
What do you mean there's no rail?
Yeah, you can go up forward, but there's nothing else. You sit upright and it's fucking horrendously uncomfortable. That car is not made to be driven on the road, really, I think, personally. Yeah. I've driven it a couple of times up like to Noosa or something and I've regretted it every time because it's just not fun. But fuck, it's loud. Hey, it's so loud and I don't know how it's legal. I remember in the first couple of weeks that I bought it, I just kept getting pulled over by the police for noise pollution and I kept telling you it was a stock standard exhaust, which it is. And they just... Amazing. Yeah,
like, I wonder if they even they probably don't even measure it. I mean, surely when you get a car like that, that's almost impossible to get. How would you measure it for compliance? You would just have to take their word for it.
No, well, back in the day, before July last year, the way they did the noise compliance in Europe, which I assume is how they do it here now as well, is the manufacturer could comply the car in any mode they wanted or chose, right? So it's like a sound test where I think you have to go, it's a rolling from 40 to 80 or something past a, you know, certain decibel reader at a certain meterage away from the car. And obviously you put it in comfort mode and close the valves on the exhaust and it makes fuck all noise. Now, from July, when that regulation changed, they now have to comply the car in every mode. So you have to be able to pass the noise test in race. And that's why cars like the F8 Tributo, the Ferrari F8 Tributo, sound like shit. They have no noise.
They really do sound like shit.
Like I drove that car recently on track like you, Tony, and every time it went past when I was sort of standing and watching it, as someone pointed out, it has no noise. It's like a whistle going past. It's so depressing. God. I think, you know, the Performante would have to be the loudest stock car I've ever been in.
It would probably be the last of the loud supercars, wouldn't it, before they change those rules?
I think they're going to do a Super Trofeo for the Evo, they're going to do a Performante version, like a racetrack version.
Yeah.
And I think they're allowed to just call it, because it's just a Huracan family, I think it's only ever been complied once. But I think after the Huracan's gone, like I just don't see how you can ever, and the Aventador for that matter, you're just not going to get cars that make that amount of noise again because it's not possible. They're going to have to restrict
it. I'm just looking online and there's a 2019 Performante for $455,000. In grey.
I paid in the threes for mine, so I'm a good haggler.
What about the you haven't driven the Evo yet?
I have driven the Evo, man, and it's a much better car for around town.
Yeah,
but it's about
it rides amazing, right?
Yeah, it does. It's about 60 to 65 kilograms heavier, and it's got, because of its rear wheel steering, which is amazing for around town, right? Because it turns better.
Yeah, trust me, man. On track, it's good too.
Yeah, the Performante is actually quicker on track, though.
That rear wheel steering, I just
you got to get used to it. Shit. You got to get used to it. But effectively, there's less arm twirling required. So,
but you know the best thing about the Lambo is it's actually of all my sort of special cars, I suppose, it's the best built one. It's an Audi basically. There's no panel gaps. Everything fucking works. And, you know, it's just a really solid car that you could trash day in, day out, and it'll just come back.
That wasn't always the case, man. As we'll talk about on the next Full Throttle podcast, we can talk about some issues there.
Yeah. Well, I must have had a good one. So it's been giving me a lot of problem-free motoring for a very long time.
Yeah.
Apart from police. Touch
wood. All right. This podcast is going to go on forever if we don't call it quits. So thank you for everyone that has listened in, and we hope you've enjoyed some of that car ownership. I think it is worth pointing out here as well before we wrap up that I certainly didn't grow up rich. Elbors, I know you didn't. We're just people that had normal cars to start with and then, you know, got money from the car advice selling stuff, and that's why we drive these cars. I think if we didn't have that, we would just be the same people wanting all these amazing cars and not being able to own them.
I'd still be trying to fix the gearbox in my Falcon.
Yeah, so I think it's quite sort of unique in that sense that I don't think any of us would own the cars that we do if it hadn't been for you know, where that all sort of came from. So, yeah, keep that in mind as well. We're not here to gloat or anything. We just want to share with you how much we appreciate these cars and how much we appreciate being able to buy them and enjoy them as well. So I think that's an important thing. And let us know, podcast@carexpert.com.au, or hit us up on social media if there's anything else you want us to talk about. We've got stacks of stuff that we have planned, but, yeah, always keen to get feedback from you guys as well.
Yeah.
Anything else from you guys before we get the fuck out?
No, stay tuned for next week, I guess.
I think the only thing I was going to ask, and sorry to keep this going for another 2 minutes, but what have you guys got orders on any cars at the moment?
No, well, I did have that GT3 RS, which I cancelled.
Yeah, and right.
I actually put the deposit onto, I don't know if you guys do this, but I've extended the factory warranty on the 911, which I can do for 15 years, which makes sense, good sense to me.
Well, also, if you're selling it, Tony, I think that's worth doing.
Yeah, right.
It's something good exactly. to sell with. I don't know. Look, for me, I'm happy with the cars I have, but I think one that I would like to, I'd like to probably get rid of the Supra soonish.
Really?
And yeah, I like it. It's just, I don't know. I don't want to keep it forever. Don't they?
I mean,
it's fantastic to drive, but I don't know. I just finished driving the RS6, and the new RS6 is
you need children for that car, Paul.
As big as a bus.
I know, that's the problem. I need children. I think if we have children, I have to buy one of those because it is unbelievable. And they are
special. But by the way, it does have rear wheel steer.
I know that's my only complaint. That's
really,
my only complaint.
It's pretty good in the tight twisties. I actually went the recent RS launch, and that car you can drive like a hot hatch, essentially.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It weighs like 2,300 kilos, and it is still a missile. The thing is, in Europe, they sell it with the four-wheel steering optional. So I just wish it was optional here in Australia.
Oh, right.
Anyway, I don't know. What about you, Albers? Have you got anything else on order?
Oh, I had a GT Black Series on order recently. Actually, I put an order on in 2017, but I am not sure if that's going to go ahead, honestly.
Fuck that. Cancel that shit. Can you please, are we allowed to share the email that you got?
No, I don't think so, but the requirements for me to qualify for that car were actually quite laughable. I would have qualified, but the fact that they asked.
No, but the fucking stuff they asked in that email is actually embarrassing. Let's not talk about it, but I want us to release the details.
Well, I think the main reason that I didn't go ahead with it, not wasn't necessarily the ridiculousness of the email or the fact that they used Shmi to launch the fucking thing, which I actually thought was embarrassing. It was because the car isn't limited. As far as I can find, there, like the SLS Black Series, there's 160 of them worldwide, and that was it. And, you know, that's a special car. Like, they're now, that's why they're worth $1.5 million now. But the GT Black, there's like, I don't know, I think there's close to 30 or something coming to Oz, as far as I'm aware, and that's... That's too fucking many just for our market.
Well, that was the same with GT2 RS, wasn't it?
Well, GT2 RS is over 100. And that's, I actually had an order on a GT2 RS, and the only reason I cancelled is because when I put the order, they said, oh, it'll be about, you know, maybe 20 will be coming to Oz. And I thought, oh, that's too many, but that's probably okay. And it ended up being over 100 and something. And I was like, that's just ridiculous, right? Like, that's just way too many coming for a car that expensive. And the Black Series is fucking expensive, right? So, yeah, but look, that's one of the things. I don't know if any of us here are really interested in any upcoming cars that are, you know, all these new regulations with stuff. So I'm curious to know if we would buy anything more performance oriented coming out. The only thing I'd buy is that Tesla Roadster. I love that thing.
Really?
Yeah, if that ever becomes a thing, that'll be interesting. I've actually paid, like, only a deposit, but for that Cybertruck, because I would own that just for shits and giggles.
Oh, yeah. But I don't know. I definitely want a Cybertruck, 100%.
I think it'll make it here.
The deposit on the Roadster is like 50 for the normal and 150 for the Founders Edition. I thought, you've got to be fucking joking. That car may never exist.
Yeah, exactly. It's a lot of money. Insane.
It's a free loan to Tesla.
Yeah,
but exactly. You get your money back. Incidentally, Paul, I heard someone talking about that they took a performance Model 3 to Bonneville, and top speed they got out of three runs was 159 miles an hour, which is about 258.
Yeah, it's speed limited to 255.
Is it? Yeah.
Yeah.
They didn't quite get there. I think 162 mph was there.
Yeah.
Was the factory claim.
The problem with electric cars, unless it's a Taycan with that two-speed gearbox, your electric motor has to have this huge band of you know, operability. And once you get to that top end, 250, 260 k's an hour, the electric motor is spinning at an incredible rate.
18,000 apparently. It'll go up to
RPM. Yeah, it's crazy.
Insane.
Okay, we need to end this. Otherwise, this will go on forever. Yeah, thank you for tuning in. Email us. Let us know what you want to hear about. And we will chat to you guys next time. Oh, actually, you will hear us chatting next time.
See you guys.
See you guys.